Today's journey to wellness in Indian country is made possible by the University of Minnesota Medical School Duluth Campus, educating medical students dedicated to serving rural Minnesota and American Indian Alaska Native communities. Jill Dorfler, our guest this morning. Hey, Jill, good morning. Hi.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Nice to have you here. See, you're doing a cool project, and we actually get a chance to talk about this because thanks to the weather in April in this community, it got pushed back a little bit. There are going to be three Native artists that are going to talk about the Intersections exhibit. It was rescheduled to Tuesday, the 30th of April. It was supposed to be a week or so ago, and then it was when we had the rain event thing, and you get to moderate the panel. Do you get to do a lot of arts moderation, or is this sort of stepping out of your regular duties?
Oh, this is definitely stepping out of my regular duties, but it's something that I'm excited and happy to do. I'm the department head in American Indian Studies here at UMD, and I teach a variety of classes, but art is not my area of expertise. I think of myself more as a fan of art, and so when Krissa White, Tweed Museum director, curator of the Intersections exhibit, approached me about the possibility of moderating the panel, I said, oh, absolutely, that would be a lot of fun to learn more from the artists, both about their background, but as well as about their works of art that are in the exhibit.
One of the things that I learned in the last year, which is such a fun part of the job, is the things you get to learn, is Heide Erdrich was online doing the social media thing. And she, of course, is a writer and an author and an editor. And she realized that even people who were in the know in literary circles were attributing poetry that white people had written to, you know, faux Native American authors. They didn't realize that these authors were not, in fact, Native American. And then there was a bunch of stuff that was attributed to Chief Joseph that he probably never said. And it was all of these, in Black Elk, and it was all of these. And she was like, first of all, how come these people don't know who really is a Native author and who really isn't a Native author? And secondly, where are the contemporary Native poets? Where are the contemporary Native writers that we ought to be talking about? So, of course, she toddled off and created a fabulous big book collection of these authors. Do you feel that it's a similar instance in that Native artists need to be seen more? I don't know whether there's the same sense of, you know, people looking at 100 or 150 year old art and saying, oh, wow, this is the stuff that I'm excited about. Do you feel that maybe people don't even realize that there are contemporary Native artists? What's your sense of this?
I think there definitely needs to be more contemporary exposure for American Indian artists today. We've been lucky to see a couple of works of public art in Duluth. I think of the mural Sarah Howes did, and there's the other mural at the American Indian Community Housing Organization. Some of that public artwork is really important because I think for a lot of people in their everyday lives, they might not have an opportunity to be exposed to a lot of contemporary American Indian art, and they might not realize that contemporary American Indian art takes any variety of forms. It's not about a specific subject matter per se. It's not about a specific medium that they're working in. They're working in all types of mediums, using all types of subject matters and topics for the works of art. And the way that Krissa organized Intersections was to allow an opportunity for visitors to the museum to see intersections among these works of art because there isn't a single identifier. And so she worked to identify a variety of themes, things that probably are a little bit expected, like nature and connection to the natural world, but then things that might be a little more unexpected, like social justice connections in the works of art. And so I think it's an amazing opportunity for the public to get to come in and experience the Tweed and see all these wonderful contemporary artists.
This is kind of a new conversation. I love language, so I pay a lot of attention to it. I love the new conversations we're having around the idea of intersectionality, which is clumsy to say, and these intersections, places where, for example, being Native meets being a woman, or being white meets being gay, where these different parts of yourself meet and intersect. Because we realize we've had these conversations with people. I know about conversations that I've had with Jeremy Neville Sorrell about the interesting intersection for him about being a man and in a position of power, but being a Native and perhaps not being in a position of power, and what that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
How important are these conversations, do you feel, in dragging, at least in the minds of many people, in kind of bringing Native culture into the forefront and into this contemporary space, so that we're still not thinking about people as they might have been 100 years ago?
Absolutely, yes. The general public perception about American Indians still remains somewhere in the historic past, in the mist of 1890 or thereabouts on the plains in the United States. And that is so far from reality today that an opportunity with the contemporary artists to really just explode those stereotypes. And when we think about intersections, to show the complexity of contemporary identities, like you said, the spaces where different parts of an individual's identity meet each other, and there might be a contrast connected to that. So I think that's definitely something that the viewers, as they go through this exhibit, they will be surprised, I think pleasantly surprised, by the diverse nature of the works of art. But then as they get into it more, they start to see patterns and intersections for themselves as well.
The three artists who are going to be part of the panel discussion are Dayani Whitehawk, Steve Primo, and Karen Savage. They all have different tribal backgrounds and affiliations. They all have wildly diverse backgrounds. Have you had the opportunity yet to either talk with them beforehand, to kind of start to do like a pre-interview with them? Or have you started at least, listing the questions or the things that you want to talk to them about? Can you give us a little sneak peek?
Yes, absolutely. We haven't had a chance to do a pre-conference call. I think we're going to wing it a little bit. But Chris and I together came up with a list of questions that's definitely too long. But, you know,
what are you going to do? Are interesting.
Exactly. Yeah, we're going to ask each of the artists a little bit about their background, how they became artists, because that's another thing people are interested in, becoming the possibility of becoming a professional artist, and what each of them, what their path was toward that. We're going to also ask about their definition of American Indian art. And we're going to ask them if there are artists that they find particularly inspiring that they want to put us on the hunt for, looking at other works of art. And then challenges that they've faced as artists, as being Native artists. And then, of course, we have two women on the panel as well. And so then the gender dynamic between the different experiences with the male and female artists. And I'm sure many other things. And I'm going to try to get myself to quiet down and let the audience ask questions too at the end.
It really is fun to have the opportunity to have smart, clever people that you can ask questions of. It really is kind of amazing. Is my sense, and I could be wrong, is that if you decide to make a living in the arts, air quotes, it's kind of an equal opportunity, really hard for everybody, but I could be wrong. It may be, and that's, of course, part of what this conversation is going to bring out a little bit. So are you familiar with the work of these artists at all, or have you done a little bit of research into them now that you're going to be talking with them? And what have you discovered about them that is making you even more excited for the discussion?
Oh, yeah. Excellent question. Yeah, I'm excited. Like I said, I'm an art fan, basically. So I'm excited to see all of their works of art. I'm familiar with Karen Savage's work quite a bit. Amazing animals oftentimes come about, but also individuals, and she's a painter primarily. The works of art that I've, actually, they're all painters, maybe, now that I think about it.
I'll have to check my notes.
I have to check the bios. I didn't bring a little bio of each of them. I'm relying on my Monday morning memory, which
exactly.
may
yeah.
or may not be the best choice. I'm familiar with her work. Diane Whitehawk came to UMD a few years ago, and I had a chance to be on another panel at the Tweed at that time and have her come to my class, where she talked a bit about her background and her work of art as well. She's a Dakota artist, and you really see quill work coming out in some of her artwork pieces, translating that from the traditional form onto the canvas, which is very amazing and intricately detailed. And the scale of her pieces is often really enveloping, I find.
When European artists, white artists paint, nobody says, hey, you didn't work a Scandinavian influence into that, or you didn't work a Germanic influence into that. Is it, what do you think is the role of culture in Native art? And obviously this could be very individual, but do you feel that Native artists feel a certain amount of pressure that they need to represent certain things or topics or things in a certain way?
I think that some probably do. Like many artists, they balance the market with their own creativity and what they want to make. But what's unique for American Indian artists is, by and large, the market has been controlled by non-Indians. Whereas for other artists, the market for American art is probably largely controlled by European American. So in this case, the control of the market has been for a long time controlled by non-Indians. I think we're starting to see a shift in that, and there has been a lot of advocacy work done by artists, both locally, nationally, and internationally, to try to say, we want to set the bar for our own art. It's just a long process.
Right, right.
And there is still a desire among some collectors for a certain image that they have in their mind of what American Indian art should be. It should be these quote-unquote traditional forms. They maybe would rather buy black ash baskets or types of baskets rather than paintings. And they might like beadwork better than they like animated art or something like that. So I think it's something that American Indian artists are navigating, and there's been a lot of effort and some good things like this exhibit at the Tweed and other things that are pushing forward to say we need to expand what an average person thinks about when you say American Indian art.
The younger generation is moving ahead socially. I just see leaps and bounds. It's sort of as though they've really embraced a lot of these social changes, and it's like they've just blown right past them. So perhaps maybe we can be hopeful that some of these things will be taken care of, in the fullness of time and not that long. Final question. Do you feel that Native artists, like many other successful Native people in a variety of different fields, have additional pressure on them to be good role models for kids and to offer opportunities and to say to the younger generation, who maybe doesn't hear this as often, yes, you have opportunities. There are things you can do. You can dream big. And yes. is that fair to the individual artists, or is fair not really the question?
I think fair is probably not really the question, because if we think about it in the context of our communities, for American Indian people, we think about the fact that we all have responsibilities. So in the United States, we may think of the U.S. as Euro-American culture as kind of a rights-based kind of society. For many, not all, but for many American Indian nations and communities, we are a responsibilities-based. And so it sort of flips what we think of in dominant society on its head. And there, and having those responsibilities is good because it creates reciprocal relationships that enrich everyone's life. So having that responsibility to share with younger generations, to help bring them up, to offer opportunities for them, that not only helps them, but from our perspective, that helps the individual who's doing that work as well. They get richness out of fulfilling that responsibility the same way that in this example that the children would be. So,
Wow. If we could only recast some of our current difficulties in with a different societal model of responsibilities based as opposed to rights based. Wow. I wonder where we'd be. But that sounds like a different discussion. Jill, thank you so very, very much for coming in this morning. I really appreciate it. Have just an absolute blast. And yeah, write a whole bunch of extra questions. You'll be glad you did. Then you can always ask them afterwards.
Exactly. Thank you so much for having me this morning.
Jill Dorfler is the head of the American Indian Studies Department here at UMD. She joined us as our guest this morning for Journey to Wellness in Indian Country. Today's Journey to Wellness in Indian Country is made possible by the University of Minnesota Medical School Duluth Campus, a national leader in improving healthcare access and outcomes in rural Minnesota and American Indian, Alaska Native communities.